ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Dvijaf Pasad Vinirmukta Ghatabhi Prakritim Gataha Vavande Shirasa Vishno Kinkaran Darshanot Sava Dvijaf Pashad Vinirmukta Gatabhih Prakritim Gataha Vavande Shirasa Vishno Kinkaran Darshanotsavah Vijaf Pasad Vinirmukta Gatabhih Prakritim Gataha Vavande Shirasa Vishno Kinkaran Darshanotsavah Dvijaf Pashad Vinirmukta Gatabhih Prakritim Gataha Vavande Shirasa Vishno Kinkaran Darshanotsavah Dvijaha The Brahmana Ajamil Pashat from the noose Vinirmuktaha being released Gatabhi free from fear Prakritim Gataha came to his senses Vavande offered his respectful obeisances Shirasa, by bowing his head. Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu. Kinkaran, unto the servants. Darshana Utsavaha, very pleased by seeing them. Translation. Having been released from the nooses of Yamaraja's servants, the Brahmana Ajamil, now free from fear, came to his senses and immediately offered obeisances to the Vishnudutas by bowing his head at their lotus feet. He was extremely pleased by their presence, for he had seen them save his life from the hands of the servants of Yamaraj. Purport. Vaishnavas are also Vishnudutas, because they carry out the orders of Krishna. Lord Krishna is very eager for all the conditioned souls rotting in this material world to surrender to him and be saved from material pangs in this life and punishment in hellish conditions after death. A Vaishnava therefore tries to bring conditioned souls to their senses. Those who are fortunate like Ajamil are saved by the Vishnudutas or Vaishnavas, and thus they return back home, back to Godhead. So it says here that the devotees, they are also Vishnudutas because they help save one from death. Death meaning the material nature, the engagement in the material activities. Because these material activities are very disturbing to the living entity. And these activities, because they are not satisfying to the living entity, the Lord is also not very satisfied. So because the Lord is He, when the living entity is in relationship to Him and serving Him, The Lord is very pleased, the living entity is pleased. So in the material world, the living entity is not pleased because they are not acting in a relationship to the Lord. See here, Ajamiya, when he's been released from the nooses of Yamaraja's servants, he becomes free from fear. So here we see that he understands his relationship with the Lord. This point is made here in the purport, that those who are fortunate, like Ajamiya, are saved by the Vishnu Dutas. It means the Vishnu Dutas are going around, they are preaching, they are doing so many things to try to please the Lord. But now, if someone can take that, that is their great fortune. So somehow or another, Ajamiya was able to appreciate that the aspects of devotional service and devotees. He could understand that the devotees here have saved him. So now, in this, he becomes free of fear, and he understands he is the Lord's servant. Right? He has understood this point. So then, that means he is fortunate. He's able to take advantage of what he's been being given here. Otherwise, so many people are coming in contact with Krishna consciousness all over the world. There is ample opportunity. Of course, there are places where they've never heard, never seen. But generally, you'll find books are going everywhere, so many preaching programs. There's a lot of opportunity for the living entity to come in contact, the Rathayatras. But the fortunate soul understands that this is something serious, and that this is a means of becoming freed from the material world. And they take that seriously. So that's a very fortunate living entity who can understand, I am servant of Krishna, as opposed to, I am something else. So that is the fortune. So the living entity, besides the Vishnu Dutas doing their duties, the living entity also has his duty. And that is to make the choice to surrender. It's a very important point, sometimes misunderstood, because in the modern context, in the modern, you know, lifestyle, then everybody is basically egocentric. They themselves are the center of everything, and everything revolves around them. So if there's any change going to happen in them, it means everything else has to change. Right? If everything's as it is, naturally I go on the way I am. But if you change everything around me, it means all the devotees act perfectly, all the managers, all the GBCs, all the sannyasis, all the gurus, like that, everything goes perfectly, I maintain nicely, I get everything I need and I want, all that. And everybody deals with me so nicely, even if I deal with them badly. Now I can seriously consider making a change in myself, because it's worthwhile now. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile. I mean, I'll try to change, everything else is the same, I'll just be in the same rut. Right? If I'm in a situation where I've developed bad habits, then, naturally, if I'm in that situation, I'll continue. So that is, of course, a fact. But at the same time, as every living entity has the option to, even in such a state of habit, to change that habit. That is offered. That is the freedom of the living entity. Many times devotees will ask, well, everything is predestined. What is my freedom? But the freedom is at every moment we can choose to serve Krishna, surrender to Krishna, or not. Means the situations that we're in, that's kind of like fairly set, at least what we're experiencing today. We've already desired that situation in the past, and we've gotten it now. But what we will do with that, that is very, very different. We see in the material world, same situation, different people are reacting differently. You have a very nice situation, someone is taking advantage. You have a nice situation, someone else is not taking advantage. They're taking it for granted. You have a nice situation, someone is acting badly. Right? You have this. Some of you have wealthy families, and some appreciate and understand what is the wealth, what is being given to them by their parents, and they continue the tradition. Some take it for granted and don't pay a serious attention. And then later on, maybe they take it seriously, maybe they don't. And then there's those who waste the time. They have so much facility. They could take so much time for understanding Krishna consciousness by their, you know, good arrangement. They don't. And then this way, then they glide down to hell. Narada-dhammas. And then you'll find people in very unfortunate situations. And in these unfortunate situations, they're carried away by the situation. They also lose their good qualities and all that. But there's also others, even in the most difficult situations, still maintain their piety, still maintain their, you know, faith in God, all these different things. So the point is the situation may be, according to previous desires, arranged. But at what you will do with that situation, in every moment, the living entity is completely free to make the choice whether to remember Krishna or whether to not. So that we have to be able to discern between the situations around us and what is our actual freedom. The situations around us are carried out by the modes of nature because our body is made up of the modes of nature. And so the modes of nature have to push the body around. We absolutely have no power to push around something that is, you know, billions of times bigger than us, right? An ant can, you know, move around, what, six times its weight, and then I think there's one kind of beetle can move 40 times its weight. So now you take something 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, which is fairly small, and you take this body, which in proportion would be considered quite large. So we have to actually understand, according to the scriptures, we are not the ones that's moving this body. The modes of nature are moving it. Everything we do, every movement, every twitch, every sneeze, every like that, is done by the modes of nature. We are simply desiring. We desire to go from here and out that door, the modes of nature arrange it. And it happens. So because it happens when we desire, then we think, I'm in control. And then when we desire something that doesn't happen, we become frustrated. We are feeling tired or sick. I want to get up. I want to go do something. I can't. I become frustrated. Why? Because then we actually are in a position where we see we are not the controllers. But because we're under the illusion that we are, we become frustrated. Rather than becoming enlightened, we become frustrated. So this is the fact, is that the situation is being controlled by the modes of nature anyway, whether we understand it or not. But that freedom of what we will do in that situation, what will be our desire, to serve Krishna, remember Krishna, please Krishna, or to do something for our own self. So whether we're Krishna-centric or whether we're ego-centric, that is our choice. And then how Krishna will arrange it, that's up to him. Being that he is the enjoyer of pastimes, enjoyer of Leela, then how he's going to unfold, how he's going to do the different things, that's up to him. He is the one that will make the situation. Like when he performs his pastimes with his devotees, then it's all happening under his desire. How it will go, when there will be nice situations or not so nice situations, it's all according to him. And from that, then so many wonderful pastimes arise, so many amazing things happen. And the devotee, being satisfied in that way, is very happy, because he sees the Lord's position in him. So here the point is the fortunate soul takes advantage of that in whatever situation, and he advances. The unfortunate soul becomes bewildered by the circumstances. Right? Someone is born in a good family due to previous pious activities, devotional activities. Then they become bewildered by their wealth, their prestige, their intelligence, you know, the circumstances that they're in, and they don't take seriously Krishna consciousness, or they even give it up. The opportunities for it, they leave. They don't take seriously. Then their position is most unfortunate, right? But if they take advantage of it, then they are most fortunate. So both these things are there. Just like you have a good teacher, you appreciate a good teacher when you have a good student. Because that good student can take full advantage of what the teacher is going to teach. Same way a good student, it goes both ways. If you have a very good teacher and not a good student, then there's not a whole lot you can do. A little bit, not much. Or if you have a very good student and not a good teacher, the same happens. So both must be there. So for ourselves, what we can gain from this verse is that despite whatever situation is there, we are still free to make the choice on whether we are going to try our best in the situation to serve Krishna or not, despite whatever is going on around us. And that is to our credit. That is the fortunate soul. As we see in the pastimes of the Lord, it was not like the heavenly planets, right? Heavenly planets is perfect body, right? Perfect place to live in, you know, perfect relationships with everybody. You know, everybody looks 16 years old, you know, everybody looks good, like that. And you spend your time laughing, joking, drinking, you know, dancing, all these different things. And this way you pass your life and then finished. So if you look at it, it's pretty boring, you know. But we see in the Lord's pastimes, we don't see a situation like this. Even Krishna's in Dwarka, they're being attacked by Shishupal. No, or was that Dantavakra? Both of them. Yeah. He's being attacked by these people. Then, you know, so many things are being said. The Yadu dynasty is destroyed in a fratricidal fight. The ocean enters Dwarka. It is, you know, removed from manifest pastimes. You know, the devotees end up in the forest, you know, banished to the forest. So many difficulties are there. So if we study it, we will see that the Lord's pastimes don't go according to the heavenly things. Otherwise, if it was the heavenly things, then Krishna's manifestation with so many arms and so many weapons, riding on so many different kinds of chariots and swan airplanes, that would be the top perfection, right? But it's not. When the Lord comes in his pastimes, he takes the human form. Human form means it sometimes goes nicely, sometimes doesn't go so nicely. And in this, we become purified, and the Lord performs his pastimes, and so many wonderful things manifest. You know, Prabhupada went to America on a boat. He went with 40 rupees. You know, not ideal, right? If we came now and said, Hari Bol, Prabhu, we have a wonderful opportunity. You can take a boat for a month to some far out place you've never been before, don't know anybody, there's no place to stay, no arrangements at all. And we'll give you, inflation, we'll give you 400 rupees. Right? You know, off you go. Here's your little trunk of books. See you later. How many are going to immediately jump for the opportunity? Right? But we see, so it's far from ideal. And not only on the way, you get the extra bonus of 2 heart attacks. Like that. That's thrown in just for, you know, extra. You should be liberal, right? Like that. So this is the situation. So in these we see the glory of the Lord's devotees, the glory of the Sankirtan mission, of the Lord's mercy and care, that despite all this, everything worked out so nicely. Everything worked out so well. So that is what is there. That gives the variety. So if everything is just going to be perfect, and that will consider as Krishna consciousness, then I can be Krishna conscious. Then the thing is we're dealing with the wrong avatar. Like that, you know? We should deal with all the ones with many arms and doing all kinds of things like that. Then it'll be a little closer to that. Become, Lord Brahma, and sit there with the thousand-headed Purusha. Then it's a little bit more close to that. But otherwise, Krishna, he comes, he even ends up in difficulties. Right? He even has problems. He goes to Radharani's house, he climbs up the tree in her courtyard to get her attention at her window, and then Jatila comes along, and because I guess it's a hot day, they all decide to sleep in the courtyard, and Krishna gets stuck in this tree the whole night, right? No time with Radharani, no rasa dance, nothing. He's just stuck in the tree. So even Krishna ends up sometimes in some, you know, not so seemingly favorable situations. So these things happen. So that's the point, is that for the devotee, the situations we try to create or put ourselves in the best situation. The best situation is best association. That is the most important thing. The external aspects are not so important. They can help. They're definitely helpful. A nice, peaceful, mode of goodness situation definitely helps us be Krishna conscious. But the most important is good association. And these other things are not going to be. We can see here, it's not exactly the best situation, right? For Ajamil, he's in his body. I mean, he's not in his body now. Body is there, he's out of the body. You know, he's just had this noose around his neck, and he's got, you know, three really, you know, not very pleasant-looking personalities with their well-trained dogs barking and growling and all this. And, you know, in that situation, and then the Vishnu Dutas are there, you know, so it's a very intense situation. And then in that situation, he is able to become fearless. He actually sees that these Vishnu Dutas actually have his care in mind, right? The Yamadutas want to punish him for what nonsense he's done, you know, which is fair enough. He's done a lot of nonsense. But the Vishnu Dutas point out, just for chanting Hare Krishna, that nonsense is removed. All the nonsense of the universe is very minimal compared to chanting the holy name. So the Vishnu Dutas, not understanding this, they think external physical punishments, that is the real atonement. But we see that the Vishnu Dutas point out that this is not the fact. That may, purify us from the reactions we'll get from the activity. But it does not free us from the desire. Right? Someone does something wrong, means the activity is considered inappropriate. But what's more inappropriate is the desire or the consciousness that created that situation. Right? Means the activity is bad, but we think more badly of the person's mentality that he could do that. That is the most disturbing element. Because even if that person is not doing the thing, still people are wary of the person because of the mentality. They're not doing all like Jagai and Madhai. They were not doing any bad activities after they surrendered to Lord Chaitanya. But everybody was worried about, well, we know these guys, you know. You know, we've been watching them for the last so many years. We live with them, we know them, right? Like that. And then we find that I joined before they did, right? All the other devotees that were there had become devotees, and Jagai Madhai joined later. They were new bhaktas, right? And now suddenly they're advanced devotees. How is this? So they were worried about the mentality. They were worried about Jagai Madhai's mentality. That maybe they're not doing anything right now, but who's to say they're not going to do something, you know, in 5 minutes? like that. So the mentality is actually what most people are worried about. But the prayaschitta, your atonement, only deals with the reactions to what they've already done. You know, they've stolen and murdered and drank and, you know, offended and all that. The reactions to those means what physical reactions, mental anxieties they will get in the future for doing that. That is removed by prayaschitta, by atonement. But their mentality to do that is not touched at all. You know, it's completely aloof from the atonement. Atonement has nothing to do with the other thing. Absolutely nothing to do. Because the desire in the heart creates a mentality. Of course, by physical disturbance and this and that, one has a tendency to be less proud. So one is not as confident to perform these activities. So it creates a tendency to do them less because of the environment. But actually, it doesn't ultimately do anything because it's the desire that creates. So by the performance, by chanting Hare Krishna, that removes the desire. By devotional service, that removes the desire. So the Yam Vishnu Dutas are pointing out the real prayaschitta is chanting the holy name and the process of devotion that goes along with that. The process of sadhana bhakti and all that supports this chanting of the holy name. That is the real prayaschitta. So someone is nonsense, there's to be engaged in more service, not less service. Like that. So this is their point here. Is that the chanting the holy name actually purifies one. Nothing else does. Otherwise, then it would be natural. Okay, the Yamadutas get him for a while, and when he's purified, then the Vishnu Dutas will come and collect him for chanting Hare Krishna. Right? First purify yourself from all the nonsense that Ajamil's done. Right? He was born in a Brahmin family. Prabhupada said he was first class Brahmin. And Prabhupada points out first class Brahmin can only be a devotee. A non-devotee cannot be a first-class Brahmin. They can be second-class. They do all the duties of a Brahmin, but they are not first-class. First-class means he understands, I'm a devotee of Krishna. Right? There's in a Brahmin, you have dvija. That would be third-class. Means they've received the sacred thread, and that's it. They don't know anything. They don't know what to do. Second-class is vipra. He has been trained in the scriptures. He knows how to perform the ritualistic activities. And he is situated in the Brahminical culture. That's second class. First class is then he realizes, I am a devotee of the Lord. All this knowledge I have, all the rituals, everything that I do, that is all meant for the Lord. That is first class Brahman. So Ajamil was a first class Brahman. So he's born in the family of devotees. He was a devotee of the Lord. Then he has done all this nonsense. Right? So now, in this situation, now it is up to the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. So now the Vishnudutas could say, yes, just make sure you understand that this person is a devotee. He's done nonsense, and when you get finished, you know, throwing him off cliffs and roasting him in the boiling ghee and all these things, then we're going to come along and collect him because he's chanted the holy name. But first you have to purify him, otherwise we can do nothing, right? We have come to give the devotional process. Unless you've purified him by the material punishments, then the devotional process will act. And then they would have just, you know, come afterwards. And then after he's been purified and all that, then they would have come down to the hellish regions and then put him in the swan plane and then taken him back to Godhead. But we see they didn't. They came and said, all this atonement you're talking about, this is not the real thing. The real thing is chanting Hare Krishna. He's chanted. Now we're going to engage him in more service, right? Because he's going to take birth now in a very good situation in which he's going to continue his devotional life. Right? So now he's done all this nonsense as a debauchee and all this. And then suddenly, what is the result? He chanted one Hare Krishna. Right? And then now he's going to end up taking birth in a high-class Brahmin family and performing pure devotional service. Right? Instead of being punished for that. So then it doesn't seem proper. That's the Yamaduta's difficulty. They say, well, I don't understand, you know. He's done this ocean of nonsense, and then with one chanting of Narayan, then you're going to give him all these benefits. You know, I don't understand. So this is what the Vishnudutas then point out, is that one chanting of the Lord's name has some substance. So for that substance, he is being rewarded. And that ocean of nonsense that he did is all illusion. So by creating another situation of illusion, means the hellish regions, you're not going to correct the illusion. One shadow does not remove another shadow, right? You have a shadow, you put another shadow on top of that, it just becomes more dark. But you have a shadow, you put light, it goes away. So this is their point. So now, here, in this, so that we strike a balance, then the point here is we have qualified devotees and those who are qualified to follow those devotees. So devotees are qualified by being kinkaras. This is an important thing here. It uses the word kinkaran under the servants. Right? Didn't say here Vishnududa or this or that. Even Vishnududa means messenger of Vishnu. They said kinkarans, the servants. Right? Is that one is surrendered to the servants. So one is qualified as a servant. Right? There's only one person in the whole cosmic creation who is qualified by not being a servant. But even though this one person has that position, still this person acts as a servant. Right? And that is Krishna. Everybody else in the cosmic manifestation, including all of the Vishnu avatars, everything, all servant of Krishna. They're all in the mood of servant. They're all, at least, they're in the mood of servant. And those who are intelligent are in the mood of servant. So that means everyone has a position of servant. So this aspect is being brought out here. Is that he's offering obeisances to the servants of the Lord. And they have come to give the message. That's what Prabhupada says here. The Vaishnavas are also Vishnu. They carry out the orders of Krishna. So what is Krishna's desire is his order. Right? Krishna, Lord Chaitanya desired that everybody be saved. That is his order. Right? That is his order. So they're carrying out the Lord's order, and this makes them qualified. So as one is able to carry out the order, that is one's qualification. So Ajamil is surrendering and offering obeisances to such servants. Like that. And he is qualified because he is able to understand that this is something very valuable and wonderful. And he's taking advantage of the situation. Right? So that we have to understand the situation is not so pleasant and wonderful. You know, he's not in a wonderful, like, you know, beautiful forest, you know, like that, like in Bindu Sarovar, where you have, is it Kasyapa? Kasyapa, also the Kardama. Yeah, Kardama. Beautiful place. I mean, only pious trees, only pious animals and birds. You know, the place was called Bindu Sarovar because of the Lord's tears. So auspicious. In this situation, the Lord comes, he surrenders to the Lord. And here we have the exact opposite. No trees, no nice animals, no holy place. You know, he's living in the prostitute's house. You know, he has these nasty guys there with their dogs and their chains. And very intense situation. You know, it's kind of situation in which, you know, your brain just doesn't work. Within this situation, he's surrendering to the Lord. He's able to see material life, spiritual life, and he's able to surrender. So both, very pleasant and unpleasant. We see that the devotees are, those who are fortunate are able to take advantage. Right? So it's not the situation. Yeah? Different demons came to Vrindavan. Most wonderful place. More than just some pious trees. These are Kalpavriksha trees. More than just some pious animals. These are all Surabhi cows and all that. So there, all the demons are coming to Vrindavan. In that atmosphere, they could go, wow, this is so nice. So different from Kamsa's palace and all the politics and nonsense. And they become attracted and see the nice devotees and just surrender to Krishna. But none of them did. So even though it was the most wonderful external situation, they didn't surrender. Like that. So we see the externals is just to help. But it doesn't really make the decision. The decision is ours. The decision is fully ours. So here this is glorious. Ajamil has understood. He has offered his obeisances now. He has now, he says here, he's become fearless. Meaning that now he's understood his position as a servant of the Lord. Because you can only be fearless when there's no material identification and material desire. Right? When there's material identification, there's fear. Because then the body and everything that goes with the body can be lost. So that creates fear. So when one's fearless means one understands one is the servant of the Lord. That is fearless. So he's surrendered. And he's surrendered to the Lord's devotees. So this is very glorious. So this is the example that's being set that we in any situation can take advantage. You know? Main thing is we simply try for is good association. Right? The situation here is absolutely terrible, but he has good association, the servants of the Lord. And that's the only thing he has. So that's what we should look for. Then we'll be happy. Any questions or comments? Or? Yes?
I've got a comment and a question. What you said about...
Comment on a question or a comment and a question?
Your comment is, when you said about the Yamadutas having chains and dogs, I just didn't realize where the Hell's Angels are all about. I mean, he calls themselves Hell's Angels, which is what they have. And Prabhupada says you can't dream up something which you never experienced.
Yeah.
So it's all falling into play.
They ran out. They weren't quite pious enough to maintain the position as Yamadutas. So then they had to come down like that. You know, the Yamadutas also move on the roads. There's a specific road they always move on. Barking dogs and stuff like that.
The question is there some particular significance to the meaning of the word Ajamil?
Ajamil, oh, that I don't know. I don't know the Sanskrit. As anyone knows? An Ajamil, the root of that, or where it's derived from? No, check, that's a very interesting. Because generally you'll find all the names of meaning. Because Sanskrit is interesting, it's because everything is based on verbs. All the nouns and pronouns, everything, are all based on verbs. Something is a noun because of what it does. So the activity, action, activity is always the central feature in the whole Vedic culture, even in the language. So like this is, we just call it a table. The name doesn't have anything to do with what it does. Does it signify? But in the Sanskrit, the name will be something that means which holds or which it's, you know, like gives support or like this, you know, just giving. So generally the names all have some meaning like that. But I don't, unfortunately, know. We are uneducated. It's one of the signs of sinful reactions is one is uneducated. So, yeah, you'll have to forgive us for previous sins that we cannot. We don't. We only ended up with the Malecha language, you know, English, and not even good quality English. We ended up with American English. Yeah, yeah. Okay, right? In England, there's English, and then there's American, right? It's another language. It's not. Yes.
Said that they're totally free to choose between serving Krishna or not.
Yeah.
Because many people who have never heard of Krishna have no understanding of Krishna. So, where is that freedom?
Ah, okay. Did you hear? Okay. It means, the question was, is that making the point that at every moment we have the freedom to choose to serve Krishna? Then he was saying, what about those who have never heard about Krishna? So what is their freedom? So the freedom is that at every moment they can choose to try to understand what are the higher principles and what is God and who's actually in control. Actually understand that they're not in control. So depending upon the individual, how much interest is there, then they can become situated or not. They'll come in contact with the devotees. Krishna will arrange. If not, then they'll come in contact with someone who can instruct them on whatever level. You know, like someone at a very basic level, they just understand that material nature is higher. Like that, so they'll worship, you know, the thunderbolt or the mountain probably gives the example for the aboriginals, is that they see that that is there, but that at least it's a step in the direction. But if they're interested, they do have. You have so many devotees who, from aboriginal background, but they're coming in contact, understand the philosophy, preach very well, and that. So even though by nature one would think that kind of interest or intelligence wouldn't be there, or that sophistication, they're still able to gain it and not. So it is separate. But that desire has been strong enough for real, actual Krishna consciousness. And if they're only wanting partial, or you know, some other level of anamoy, manamoy, like this, then they'll get that. So where you want to situate yourself, the material modes take you. Like that. They arrange. They're very... That's why we respect the material nature's mother. Because mother arranges. Mother arranges facilities like that. You know, she sees that, you know, desire is that. You want to eat, she arranges that. You want to sleep, she arranges that. So whatever we desire, she's arranging. So in this way, she's mother. But if we're trying to enjoy, then that form of mother is like a witch. So then it says, what is it? Get off the lap of Maya. It's a witch of... Yes. What's that? Pisachira kola. Yeah, it means they call it the lap of Maya. Like that. So that's it. This one.
I was thinking in relation to that, there are a lot of incidences of bridges of had that make that very, very clear.
Oh.
That they get to an area where no one's ever heard any sankirtan or anything, but then they find the rock art and books.
Yeah.
And all you, I have an experience in Australia, I think, with distribution there. Of a woman in the middle of the night, a huge argument with her husband. She got in the car with a determination to kill herself. She was driving, and somehow the thing wouldn't work properly. She went out of the car to see what was stuck underneath it, of the one of her books, and somehow it pulled up in there. No work. And she just sat there and started reading it. I had my butt that time to go out in the middle of the night saying, "Your culture has this." So I'm like,
that's amazing.
Krishna has this.
That's amazing. Or the ones that I heard, so many devotees who came, devotees from finding a Bhagavad Gita in the garbage, you know? I don't know, either they walked through something in the garbage, saw the book, pulled it out, or they were rummaging through the garbage and found the book. I didn't ask. But, you know, somebody buys the book, but doesn't take advantage, and they throw it in the garbage. And someone else who was just minding their own business, but they had some interest in Krishna. It's amazing.
Okay. I was going to ask with regards to association. Sometimes in this form we see some, you know, devotees that are pretty far out with the Lord Charitana. And my question is it dangerous to calibrate these devotees as more advanced than they are, you know what I mean? So that you might reveal them as, you know, in some of these, you know.
when you're dealing with devotees, it's always better more than less. And when you're dealing with the material nature, it's always better less than more. You know? It's always safer. Because in the conditioned state, we have the tendency to judge everything in connection with ourselves or with what will be beneficial for us on the material platform. Because, see, ultimately there's a very little considered principle, which is iron and fire. And even though iron has the qualities of iron and it's only iron, right? Nothing glorious. But when it's in fire, it takes on the qualities of fire. So by association with the devotees, by association with the order of the devotees, then even someone who is, we would consider very ordinary, then takes on all these wonderful qualities because they're in the fire. So as long as they're in the fire or in those aspects that they're in the fire, they are as good as fire. Right? Means in our philosophy, see, if we were following, let's say, something like Dwait or Advait, you know, that's very clear. It's this or that. You know? Then these points, one would generally, how you say, have a tendency to categorize and regulate a lot more. Because the whole thing is, it's just you have one point and everything is calibrated according to that. But our philosophy is a chinta beda beda tattva, simultaneously one and different. So a lot of emphasis is put on the oneness of the living entity with the Lord. Oneness in qualities, oneness in mood and mentality. Right? That is put on because that is how God looks at it. Right? The Son sees there's the Father, there's myself, we're two people. But the Father sees basically they're one. It's a different angle. Right? The Father sees more the oneness. The Son sees more the difference. But both are there. So this whole point of God is the one and the devotees are the ones, the parikars, the associates of the Lord, they're the ones that see more the oneness. Right? And the conditioned soul is one who sees more the difference, except for a material nature. He sees himself one with the material nature. Right? So we have to be able to accommodate both. Is that if someone is in the fire of Krishna consciousness, they are fire. Because that's how the Lord sees it and the advanced devotees see it. So it behooves us to also at least try to appreciate that. We may not see like that. It means the sage with equal vision sees like that. He sees the dog and the dog eater also as spiritual. Like that. So the topmost people see everybody as spiritual. Right? Therefore, if they want to preach, they have to at least come down to the madhyam level. Otherwise, to them, everybody's already advanced more than them. So what's the need to preach? I don't preach to someone more advanced than me. Right? I preach to someone less. So an Uttamadhikari doesn't see anybody less advanced than them. Therefore, they don't preach. The madhyamas preach. Because they make the distinctions. So the madhyama is the perfect platform because they have the ability to at least conceptually understand the vision of oneness that the uttamas have. And at the same time as they can relate to the difference that the kanistas see. So they're able to give the mercy of the Lord. Kanistas don't give mercy, the uttamas don't give mercy, the madhyamas give mercy. So, therefore, on that platform of the philosophical of iron and fire, we see them as non-different. No, there's different degrees of fire. That is there. But we have to understand, on the absolute platform, there is variety. There's variety. Means we see that, we worship Sri Vas Thakur as our deity, right? He is our deity. When we worship Panchatattva, he is our deity. But he is Jiva. He is on the absolute platform. He is absolute. But he sees himself submissive to the internal Shakti and the Purushas. Right? So he sees, and the Shakti sees submission to the Purushas. And even in the Purushas, then Advaita sees himself submissive to Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Nityananda to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya to his devotees. So within absolute, there's variety. If we can't see that, it's actual Mayavad philosophy. Covered very nicely. So when we cannot understand the principle of iron and fire, and that absolute doesn't mean up there in the sky and the Om sign and no one can say anything, and if somebody can correct the guru, then he actually can't be a guru. And absolute means no one tells him anything. You know, it's like the concept of absolute, it's like the perfection of yuppie culture, right? You know, the hands off, you know, I'm cool, don't touch me, you know? Like that I move around and that, and you know, and I'm cool and no one bothers me, you know, and whatever I say, I got snappy answers for anything. No one can say something that I don't have a snappy answer for. So all we've done is taking the modern culture and just tried to convert that and apply it on Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we figure our gurus have to be like that, or the advanced devotees have to be like that. But that is like the farthest thing from the truth. You can be absolute and be submissive to everybody. This is a total Mayavad misunderstanding of absolute. Because in the Mayavad concept of absolute, then everybody's equal. It's just the same. Right? You go to the Brahman, you're the same as the soul next to you. In fact, you know, God is also. God is Brahman, you're Brahman, I'm Brahman, it's all Brahman. So it's the perfect equalizer. But you will notice that there is no interaction. Therefore, it works. I can be Brahman, you're Brahman, God's Brahman, but there's no interaction. So there's no offense. So as long as we have this idea, we go to the forest and sit there alone, fine. But as soon as we want to interact with somebody, then there must be culture and etiquette. Right? And that means relationship. The person's either senior, equal, or junior to me. If they're senior, I respect. If they're equal, I make friends. If they're junior, I try to help them. So one cannot take one part and leave the other. Otherwise, that's a total misunderstanding of Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness, the central feature is abhideya, or the process of interacting with other people. Sambandha is just to establish what is the relationship. Prayojana is to set the goal. But how we'll do it is through abhideya, through the process of devotional process. And that is relationships. So we have to be very, very careful about understanding what is personal philosophy and what is impersonal. So as personal, we respect. It means we respect even if they have one quality that is something. I mean, that's the point here. One chanting of Narayan is worth an ocean of sin. I mean, it's greater than an ocean of sin. So here, one good Krishna conscious quality basically overpowers an ocean of not so good qualities. Because it's just time, right? You stick one end of the iron in the fire, and it's just time before the other end also becomes red hot. The end that touches, that becomes. So if you only put one end in, the end gets hot. You put the whole thing in, the whole thing gets. But the Vaishnava is expert at recognizing what is in the fire. And he is expert in not taking so much consideration of what's not in the fire, unless he is in a position to correct that. Like that. But if we take the position of seeing what's not in the fire, unless we're in a position to correct that, this is not the position of, this is not devotional culture. Let us say someone is very expert in leading kirtan, but other than that, we know he may get angry with devotees easily or so many different things, those side we leave. But when they're leading the kirtan, we get involved because they lead a nice kirtan. Because otherwise, if we do that, then we have to, if we want to apply the topmost platform of looking, we have to apply the topmost platform of the considerations of devotional service. Right? So if we do that, then a Kanista Adhikari is a Prakriti Bhakta, a total mundaner. Only difference between them and the Karmi is they've accepted that God is supreme. And that's it. So factually, all Kanistas are bad association because they're materialistic. So any advanced devotee would never associate with them because they're bad association. Everything they do is materially motivated, materially everything. In fact, their process is engaging their karma in the Lord's service. So they're just engaging their conditioned nature according to their own interests. I have an interest in music. I get involved in music. I engage in music and Krishna service. I didn't ask, well, what do you want, Krishna? I like music. I engage that. But that is the process, right? That's the perfection. So if we want to look at everything from the viewpoint of the topmost, then we have to take everything. We can't pick and choose. Therefore, Kanistas are... it's not advised to associate with them because of this materialism. You want to look for, Lupa Goswami says, associate with those more advanced than you. Kanistas will associate with the Madhyams with the Uttams. Right? That's what it advises. So if you want to take that hard line, let's take it hard line. Not only that, Rupa Goswami says the Kanista cannot understand who is advanced. He actually cannot understand what is the Madhyam and Uttam. Has no idea. Right? Doesn't have an idea. Doesn't have a clue. He can only go by what the scriptures say. You know, Prabhupada says, always engaged in the Lord's service, speaks according to the scripture, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. He gives you simple definitions by which a Kanista can understand what's advanced. Right? So, if we want to take those things, let's take it that way. But we have to understand what the consequences are. So we take it that way, now are the devotees going to be enthused? Right? Are they going to have a strong confidence that, yes, I'm a devotee and all? No. So because of the lack of qualification, especially of those who are coming from, you know, the Kali Yuga backgrounds, they don't have the determination in that to understand, yes, I'm so fallen, so let me get it together. Therefore, then that is not emphasized at all. The emphasis is that everybody who takes up devotional service is a devotee. And what they are performing is solid devotional service. Because that is also the fact. And therefore, everybody's encouraged. And therefore, how you recognize advanced devotees is also put on a very simplistic platform, because the position of the Kanista is also on the simplistic platform. You're doing, engaging your nature in Krishna's service, perfection. Right? So in the same way, our advanced devotees, they are always engaged in Krishna's service. When you see them, Uttamadikar, you see them, you chant Hare Krishna. That's the definition. Right? And these are coming from the Lord and the advanced devotees. So we can appreciate their opinion and take it, or we can make our own opinion. So the whole point is if we want to look at this, we have to look at the whole picture. It's very easy to take out situations, difficulties, then take it and then apply it all in one way. But then we get according to logic, this is over-application or under-application. Because we don't actually apply the thing just for what we want. You know? Just like if you have a mosquito, you know, and you get out a howitzer, everyone will say that this is, you know, a little bit over-application. You know? Or if we have a rhinoceros and we get out a fly swatter, then they will also say that this is a mild under-application. You know? So you have to apply exactly what applies and then see it in its total context. Then there is balance, then there's satisfaction, then there's progress. And if we over or under apply, there's difficulty. Right? So that is in general. So it's better always to overestimate. You'll see even in cultured society, mundane cultured society, that you always overestimate the person's position first because you don't know who they are. If I go out and I meet somebody and they actually are a big position and I've underestimated them, I offend them. If I overestimate, then they may be a little flattered and you can drop it back. But underestimation is only for uncultured people, untrained. So those devotees who underestimate the devotees, it's due to their lack of being cultured and trained. The backgrounds, we have to understand, it's Kali Yuga. So it's natural that they will behave in such uncultured ways. And we also don't take it so seriously. Right? It's understood that that will happen. But it cannot be tolerated in bona fide Vaishnav circles that such people become proud and over-vocal like that. That can't be tolerated by the sincere devotees. Because that is just a total breach of etiquette. You're uncultured, okay. But if you try to make your uncultured into a philosophy, that is not tolerated by the Lord and His devotees. That won't be tolerated. So one has to understand the process. Right? We have to understand. Then it makes everything very nice. If we're uneducated, it makes it very difficult. So the whole point is Krishna consciousness. All this is here so that we learn the culture. That's why Bhagavatam, in the Kali Yuga, the important scripture is the Puranas, more than the Vedas. Right? Because the Vedas give you the tattvas, but they don't really show you the application. Because people in previous ages are so qualified, they could take it step by step, right? It's like in the Gita, you take it that Krishna says, gives so many items of knowledge. One of them is humility. So generally you find, you know, devotee will look at it, and how is humility knowledge? Right? I mean, Krishna says, this is knowledge. Anything other than this is ignorance. I mean, the first thing he says, humility. Right? Right? So now, then in previous yugas, they could take that. Okay, now humility, what does that mean? Means I see myself less, I respect others, which is the second point that Krishna says is knowledge. So now in this thing, I will now, as submissive, I will be able to inquire and gain knowledge from someone who's superior. And not only that, I'm not going to go by just what I see or inference. I'm going to go by what they tell me, authority. Right? Which gives then study of the scripture. So just by saying the one, they can all the other ones all make sense. And then they see that, yes, this is knowledge. Knowledge is the whole process by which I gain understanding. Otherwise, I'll just say knowledge is, you know, you hand me the, you know, 10th grade math book. That's knowledge. You know? But knowledge is the whole process by which we learn. So process becomes the point. So in the previous age, you could give the Upanishads and all the other areas could be understood from that. In the Kali Yuga, people don't have that kind of determination, intelligence, and all that. So the Puranas become, as a scripture, more important because they give the application of the tattvas. Right? Means it says the king, you know, leads the society. Okay? He controls the society. But now how that's done? Does he do it as a megalomaniac? Or does he do it as a very, like a father, a very kind, compassionate father? So then in this Puranas, we see the history is of how the kings acted as kind fathers, not as megalomaniacs. Right? And the people are very satisfied and everything, and how they interacted, and the, even the common person, how he interacts with the king with the common person, the king with other, you know, the members of his court, the king with other kingdoms, the king with the Lord. So if you read Bhagavatam, all that, a manager, how he deals with all levels is all explained here. How the husband deals, how the wife deals, how the Brahmins deal, the kings, you know, the common person, the devotees, even how they deal with the non-devotees. Everything is explained. So all the tattvas are given in there. Then, of amongst Puranas, then the Bhagavatam is the best. Because then every example is in connection with Krishna. It directly gives us, says direct perception. It's not indirect. Because he's already written the Puranas. And then Vyasadeva tells him, because you didn't directly show how each and everything is devotional service. Right? So that makes the Bhagavatam the best of all the Vedic literatures. It's the perfection. Because the example is there. The lifestyle is there. So that is what we're supposed to take. We're supposed to base our life and everything on this. This is what the philosophy is put into use. This is it here. It gives the perfection. So we see they deal very, very nicely. I mean, if we really want to get down to it, by that, aren't we overestimating everybody by calling them Prabhu? Prabhu means master. You know what I mean? What has all the devotees done to deserve to be called Prabhu? You know? And, you know, this one has this quality, that one has that. You know, we should stick to, you know, hey, you. You know? And then why do we call all the ladies Mataji? Right? Mother. And not only that, we put G, respectful. Right? Because the position of respect. But why? I mean, everyone, how many of the ladies around here has done anything for me as a mother? So if we want to look like this, we see we get down to the basest, lowest ebbs of street culture. The lowest of the low. And even taking out the loyalties and that even find in the street gangs. Just bring it down to the lowest of low. That no one can even work together as a gang. They have to be independent individuals. They're a one-man gang. And that is the culture that we tend towards if we give these things up. You know, but I mean, that's of course, that's the modern, that's the modern culture. That's what is being projected, right? You know, you buy a pair of Levi's because the commercial shows how cool you are on the street, you know? You wear your Levi's and no one bothers you. I mean, you got Levi's on, everyone stays out of your way. You know? Like that. So that's the whole thing. Tough. Look tough. Be tough. You know? So we can do like that, but we have to understand what kind of culture we've gone down to. It's not human. Because human culture starts with you know, some respect, some discrimination, like that. So that's just the beginning of the culture. And then within that, then we have the Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, which is so much more subtle. You know, simultaneous one and difference. I mean, that's very subtle. You can, two seemingly contradictory points are perfectly blended. You have a devotee, he appears that he has some conditioned nature, but he's acting as an advanced devotee and as my authority. So here he's acting as authority, that's one position, and he's respected as such. Same time as it appears there's some material conditioning still there. Two absolute contradictory things. But they're perfectly blended by that platform of iron and fire. So therefore, we take what is in the fire, we take. What is iron, we leave. And if the person comes out of the fire, then there's nothing to gain. When they're back in the fire, then there's so much to gain. That's another point here. Ajamil, first-class devotee, means first-class brahmana, right? falls down into so much nonsense and then is again resituated as an advanced devotee. Right? So this also, this is the principle of iron fire. You can put it in, you can take it out. You can put it in, you can take it out. Now, Prabhupada was here. So many devotees, they'd come, be fired up, then they'd leave, then they'd come back. Prabhupada put them right back where they were. Then they go away, he put them right back. So Prabhupada understood. We always think, oh, Prabhupada was so nice and Prabhupada's here, he was so compassionate, because Prabhupada worked on the principle of iron and fire. Say, devotees nowadays are so this and so that, because they negate this. They work on the Yamadutta's principle instead of the Vishnudutta's. Some heavy punishment, then they'll be corrected. And not only that, the Yamadutta's, without even knowing what is the Dharma. At least the Yamadutta's can profess Dharma very nicely. They know what is, at least they know what is human culture. But we're Yamadutta's without even knowing that. And then, what is the position? And then, naturally, we cook a soup and then everybody complains, hey, this tastes terrible. So if we say Prabhupada is so wonderful, then why don't we follow Prabhupada and take the way he views and does things? No, we can't say, well, we're not Prabhupada. But then we're also, then we throw ourselves into not being followers of Prabhupada. Follower means you try to do things like they give. We don't imitate, we follow their instruction. So if Prabhupada gives instruction, this is the way you deal, this is the way we deal. That's a follower, that's a kinkara. Otherwise, then, we have to make up our own. We have to make up our own. So it's a very dangerous position. Because then we may leave the realms of devotional culture and service. Because Abhideya is the central principle. That's why we're Rupanugas. See, if Sambandha or Tattvas was the most important aspect, then we would be Sanatana Nugas. Because Sanatana Goswami is the Sambandhi Guru. Or the relationship guru. And Rupa is the Abhideya Guru. And we might say, well, Prayojana. That's, I think, what is it? Marupanda? Marupanda, right? His deity is Gopinath. Yeah. But we're not followers of Marupanda. We're not followers of Sanatana. We follow them, but we follow them as followers of Rupa. Rupa respects Sanatana, right? It means there's one prayer, one set of prayers in his Stavamala, where every prayer he uses the word Sanatana. Sometimes as respect to Sanatana Goswami, and sometimes he just uses the word Sanatana in every prayer. I mean, it's a very long thing. It's not just a few prayers. Very long. Every one. And that was offered to Sanatana Goswami. So Rupa sees Sanatana as his guru. So we see these principles of all this, of Sambandha and Prayojana, through the Abhideya. Like that. We can't say, well, this is this, and therefore we make up our own. No, we have to follow Rupa. So he's given us. Then it works very, very nicely. Right? That's the point. So there must be consistency. We can't say there should be love and trust, everyone should deal nicely and all that. No one deals with the individual, but at the same time as we don't. Otherwise it's egocentric. So if we make it that is Krishna-centric, then we get to Krishna through Rupa. So we have to follow the process that Rupa gives us. Like that. Then in this way we can see the levels of devotees. Then it works very nicely. Like that. And that's all. Does that make some sense? Okay, so we'll end here. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jainatai Gaur, Prema.